Okay, I apologize for being so punctual, but I have a 9 o'clock Zoom that I have to be out for. Well, sometimes you have to apologize for being punctual too, especially in the Jewish community. We're certainly concerned about parenting. Purim's on our mind. I don't want to mention what else is beginning to be on our mind after Purim, so we'll leave that for another time. But I just thought there's a thought that we've probably discussed it before, because if I knew how to sing, I would say that's my theme song. And that's happiness. We all want to raise happy children. We all want to be happy people. I think it's the most universally coveted emotional state that exists. Everybody wants to be happy.
Can I jump in with a question?
Already? Okay.
It's not happiness. My four-year-old daughter, Malki, I was telling her, it's Misha Nechnas Adar Marvin Besumcha, that we increase our happiness in Adar, and she said, why? And I was like, what's the connection between happiness or simcha and Adar?
Oh, okay, that's an easy one. I got scared for a minute. Adar really, Purim, of course, it's the month of Purim. It's not Adar because it's the last month of the year, or the biblical cheshbon, Nisan is the first of the month. So I don't think that's what it is. I think it's very simple. Purim represents the miraculous survival of the Jewish people throughout the millennia. The fact that we endured and survived and are here today to celebrate is beyond, it's mind-boggling. Not only were there degrees based on Homan, which was a descendant of Amalek, to destroy the Hashmid, Larug, and Abed, but that's really been the goal of Amalek throughout history. It started actually with Esau, who was the grandfather of Amalek, to destroy Yaakov, and it's gone all the way to the previous century and previous generations, where there was a plan for the final solution, which was the devious and sick endeavor of descendants of Amalek. We have a Kabbalah from the Vilna Goin that the simonim of Amalek actually applied to those people, and they certainly acted like Amalek. So, this is the greatest cause of happiness, survival. Without survival, there's no point to happiness, there's no point to anything, there is nothing.
So that's, we have Yetzias Mitzrayim, Chanukah,
Yetzias Mitzrayim is, of course, the foundation. But Yetzias Mitzrayim, okay, we came out. But we don't know that if we wouldn't have come out, we do know, avodim hayim b'parei Mitzrayim, but it wasn't a question of destroying. They didn't want us to go. They wanted us to continue living. Apparently it was a spiritual annihilation, which is also a cause of simcha, but it's physical. The physical is the primary. If we're not alive, then there's no spirituality, there's no Yetzias Mitzrayim, there's no miracles, there's no Ashgocha Protis, there's nothing. So I guess the physical survival, and it's not just, you see, it's almost like this, the physical survival of Klal Yisrael is not just challenged by Homan and Purim, but it's been challenged throughout our existence since we started. And unfortunately today, we're not so sure that we're not being challenged in that same way. I don't want to tell that to your four-year-old. But so I think this is why. This is Purim makes this a month of a very special happiness because of the survival. But I'd like to take that happiness just one step further. So since everyone wants to be happy, we need a definition of happiness. Because it's quite obvious that if we don't know what something is, that we don't know how to get it, where to get it, and if we have it, we can't even, reckon with it. So the Rambam says in Hilchos Purim, the end of Hilchos Purim, says that if a person has extra money after they fulfill the mitzvahs hayoyim, so it should be spent on matonas levyoyim. And he explains exactly why. He says, she'ein simcha amhulolo mufa'oro kimisameach lev umlolo medali. There's no such glorious simcha, like one who rejoices the hearts of downtrodden and broken people. Shehamisameach lev umlolim ha'elu doime l'shchino. One who does that is emulating his Creator. He acts as the way Hashem acts. And he brings a pasuk, l'hachrius nefesh sholim, that Hashem uplifts the downtrodden souls. So I think in this passage from the Rambam, we see a very real definition of happiness. And that definition of happiness is a person who feels like he's like Hashem. Because when you rejoice the hearts of these downtrodden people, you're just like Hashem does. This is what Hashem does. This is what I do. So happiness is this feeling that I'm like Hashem. I'm godly. I feel good about myself. And I believe that that's really the definition, because probably the highest form of happiness is osher. Aleph Shin Resh, the Sheresh is Ishur, validation. So it's really feeling good about ourselves. Now, that's good for us to know. It's also good for us to know when we deal with our children. To make a child, or to make any human being, feel good about him or herself is a key to an entree to their heart, to influence, to a connection that is so deep and so tight, because you're the most important person in my life. You make me happy. You make, and happiness being feeling good about myself. If you make me feel good about myself, wow, you're the most important and the most influential person. And that's, by the way, why parents are in such a crucial role. You know, I always say that a mother's love is not the ultimate source of happiness. Why is that? Because if happiness is feeling good about myself, okay, I'm worthy, I'm valid, I'm self-validity, osh, ishur, validation, I feel good about myself. When I feel deim el Hashem, I feel good about myself. I'm godly. Wow, that's the highest accolade you could get. But the problem with a mother is that, oh, my mother loves me. That doesn't necessarily mean that I'm so great, because she's my mother. She's pre-programmed. It's genetic. It takes away a little bit of this sense of, you know, how worthy I am, because it's almost she can't help herself. I mean, think about it. Can you help yourself from loving your children? I mean, there are parents that tell me they love their children, don't like them, but that really just means that they're angry or upset at something they do. But that love is there. That's what a mother is. That's in the genes. That's in the blood. That's in the milk. I don't know where it is. It's all over. And the mela, that doesn't validate as much. But there's something that a mother, a parent can do that can be super validating. And there's something else that a parent can do that can be super destructive. And that has to do with something, a comment that the Rambam makes. The Rambam says, just as a Talmud has to respect his Rebbe, so too the Rebbe has to respect the Talmud and to be makariv him, to draw him close. And he says the Talmud is mechuyev. By the Rebbe respecting him, it says tzorich. He must. What's the must? It doesn't say it's a chiyuv. It's a must. If you really want a Talmud, you have to show him respect. And I would say, if you really want a relationship, a meaningful relationship, if you really want to be the most important, the most influential person in your child's life, then you have to be able to show that child respect. Because respect says, I'm something, I'm worthy, I'm good, I'm great, I'm important. Imagine that. Imagine you ask your four-year-old her opinion. You know, I'm sure she has a lot of opinions. Okay, do you know how good that makes her feel? My mother asks me my opinion. That's, wow. What should I make for supper tonight? What do you think? I mean, you can't listen to everything she says, you know. But you know, I want to do something in the house. I want to put up a picture. I want to do. What do you think? Where should it go? What should we do? This one? Should we do that one? Wow! It sends a subtle message that I'm choshev. I'm important. My opinion is important. My mother respects me, and that respect makes a person feel good about themselves. And feeling good about themselves makes them happy. And you, the one who makes me feel so good about myself, right? And especially when you're a person really who doesn't have to ask my opinion. You know, if you're my friend and I want to be friends with you, so we better be nice to the friend. You better ask the opinion, because otherwise they're... But my mother will be my mother. She'll be there. They've tried it already. No matter how they treat us, you know, we're still there for them. So, and she gets, wow, makes me feel so good about myself. However, the flip side, when the mother puts down the child, it's the worst thing in the world. Because this is the person who's pre-programmed to hold from me, to love me. And she looks at me and talks to me and treats me like that. That's devastating. Then I must really be super trash. That could only be, because otherwise how could my mother? So I think what comes out of this is to raise, I believe, healthy and happy children. It requires the love, which I'm sure is there, and it requires respect. It requires treating them in such a way that they can feel good about themselves. You know, when we command and demand and insist and refuse to listen to anything that they have to say, that's disrespectful. Really is. We have to respect their person. We have to respect their feeling. We have to respect their time. We have to respect their space. We have to respect them. And the more that we can show that, the more that we make them feel good about themselves, the better influence we have on them. And I believe that if our children are happy, then everything falls into place. And if we are critical in the happiness of our children, then it's the most powerful thing in the world, because then I have true influence on the life of my child. I just want to say just one other thing, and really, you know, I know we could open it up to some discussion and alternative opinions. They're welcome. And that is, you know, I we deal in the yeshiva a lot with Shidduchim, people are dating, getting married, and so forth. And I usually ask, when they're talking about, well, is it the right decision, is it not, and this, and I ask them, I say, what does your mother say about it? I don't recall asking anybody, what does your father say about it? Unless there was some major family or religious issue, something that, you know, might be a bizoyan for the family or something, you know. I say, what does your mother say about it? A mother has a certain intuitive sense of the needs and a sort of a barometer to measure the happiness, the satisfaction, the peace of mind, the level of feeling. It's something that nobody else has. It's something that's intuitive. Maybe it's part of the Bina Yisera. Maybe it's a motherly intuition. I don't really know what it is. But it's something that it's extremely important. And we want our children to be able to follow or to take advantage of that motherly instinct, let's call it, of that inner wisdom that a mother has. If we rupture the relationship with our children, if they feel friction, if they feel put down, if they feel disrespected, or if they feel disliked, I'm sure I've said this here many times, but I think it's always appropriate to review. I remember growing up that I truly believed, I think my generation did too, that our parents lived for us. My father had a very good job. He was a very educated person. He took a job in a shoe store 2 nights a week, putting shoes on people's dirty feet just to make some extra money to be able to have tuitions for his children and things like that. So, and I think they lived for the children. Today, You know what the kids tell me? Not the four-year-olds, I don't speak to them. But the, you know what the teenagers say? You know what the adult children say? I wish my parents would let me live. They don't say anymore. I never heard anybody say, oh, the parents live for their children. We're too busy sometimes. There's too many simchas, there's too many chasnas, there's too many shavuos, there's too many classes, you know, night things like this. And the main that they don't get that message that we're living for them. And that could be very, very hurtful. If children really feel the parents live for them, they feel the love, they feel the respect, they feel the connection, they feel this is the source of my happiness, then they become very receptive to that inner wisdom that a mother can offer them, that only a mother can offer them. And we don't want to compromise that. If there's friction, then all of a sudden the mother becomes, you know, the adversary, and they're not, they've closed off a connection where they can get true insight and wisdom and understanding about life and understanding about themselves and understanding about their feelings and understanding about their situations and understanding about their connections and understanding about their shidduchim. But if there's friction, my mother, she's off. She doesn't get it. She goes back. You know the way she talks to me, you know, and you know, I just recently had the schus to reunite someone with his mother. Well, they were estranged for a while, maybe 2 years or something like that. We would talk and this. And this person is a different human being. The just that connection was transformative. Transformative. It's like he's a different person. Then he finally went to visit the mother's mother that he hadn't seen or spoken to for a few years, and that took him to a new level. He's like floating in air, this guy. He doesn't, you know, it's just like the difference. So that's what a mother is, and we want to maintain that relationship at all costs. And as we always know, that chinuch for our children is a long-term process. We're not interested just in getting them to behave today. And by the way, respect gets more behavior than discipline, I believe, but that's besides the point. But it's long term. That relationship has to be maintained. It has to be nurtured. There has to be this almost like an intimate connection between a child and a mother. And that's so nurturing, that's so satisfying, that's so stabilizing, that's so critical. And it really requires a lot of effort to make sure that at all costs, or at no costs, that we let that go to the wayside. That's my message. Short and sweet, I hope. So, if you have any comments, anyone wants to disagree, at your own risk, if you do so. Yes?
That's a good question.
I only ask one favor.
Yeah, loud. Let's say I have two kids and the same gender and they're very close in age, and then in terms of like friends, right, is it healthy for every child to make sure that each one has constantly have their own friends, or do you like, or that they have to get along and play together also? Because I like when they're playing together, you know, like, I don't know, I went to kind of classes. They say there's a lot of competition if they're very close, you know, same genders and very close in age. So what's better? To make sure everybody has their own space, their own everything? Or like there's such a concept like, you know, we play together and we have to get along.
I don't know why there's a contradiction between the two. No, it's very definitely good to have. First of all, it's good to have for, you said the same gender. I don't know if you're talking about boys
two
or
girls.
Okay. Girls get into fights. They're notorious for that.
Yeah.
And therefore, they need a lot of friends or a lot of siblings in similar age, that when I'm not talking to this one, at least I have someone else to talk to. So I think it's very healthy to have outside friends, individual, you know, each one separately, but also to be able to get along together. You know, think about it. How many, they spend so many hours at home. Oftentimes, kids get up at 5 in the morning and you're not quite ready to get out of bed at that time. So you want them to be able to get together. They have friendship. They play together. I don't know what ages we're talking about, but I think both are very important. to get along with siblings. And by the way, getting along with siblings is really very important. You know, because family is family. It's like blood is thicker than water. They have friends, and you find that many times, even when they don't have much to do with each other, but there's a bond there, there's a blood bond, there's something that connects, and they need that. That's also part of the, you know, a person, you know, people that lose siblings, it's a very tragic thing. People that came out of the Holocaust and they lost brothers and sisters, they mourn them to this day. I mean, most of them are not around anymore, but they've mourned them for 50 years. And it's an important relationship. On the other hand, I think they also need to go broader than that. You don't want to become so dependent on that relationship that they can't interact with anybody else, because you know, it's also not healthy. And also, do have to be prepared for when the relationship sours, or at least for the times when it sours before it, you know, sweetens up again. Yes.
A different topic. You were like mentioning how like how much a mother has to be involved in children and everything, obviously. And I feel like these days mothers are also fighting the battle of going out to work. Like, our first thing is running out of the house, coming back. How are we like balancing our home life and like making sure our kids are there, and then also have to like have that burden of working?
It's not easy. We live in difficult times. You know, we used to be somewhat apologetic about this, about the koilel lifestyle or the chinuch lifestyle. Today, most families need two breadwinners or more. I don't know how that works, but you know, they take the children's money. You know, it used to be that way. Kids used to go out to work when they were 12 years old. They delivered newspapers and this just to help support the family. You know, that went out a couple of generations ago. But now, at least so, I think it's a universal problem. And that's just the balancing act that we have to perform. I think what it does mean is minimizing as much as possible outside responsibilities and outside activities. As painful as it is, and some we need, I know that we did a video, we do these parenting videos, I know there's a lot of controversy about the last one, about parents going away for weekends and things like this, and leaving the kids, you know, with someone else. And you know, sometimes it has to be done, but we don't have to be at every Shabbos Sheva Brachos of every distant cousin, or every vort, or even every wedding. Or sometimes parents split it, you know. If it's a person that I'm close with, who says that both spouses have to go to a wedding when it's really my friend or your friend, or, you know. You have to, at least it should be a consideration that we have to try to minimize, because work, we have to go. Also, the truth of the matter is, those people that are able, and that's happened in this generation, the computer generation, and then the post-COVID generation, that more people are working at home. And that can make a difference, because you save travel time and you save getting dressed time and whatever else a woman has to do to before she leaves the house, you know, and you're on call, you know, so that makes it a lot better. We have to take those things into consideration. It's very important when the kids are young to try to, you know, even though we have to work, but to try it, maybe a half-day job, maybe, you know, like some way of the children have to come first. That's really my primary responsibility, is to my children. And really, I don't want to make any problems for anyone, but if a mother feels that she's neglecting her children, then she has to seriously consider and discuss with her husband that, you know, she may not be able to work as much, or she may not be able to, because that's the mother's working is very, very bedievit. Now, there's another piece. Some women just have to get out of the house, and that's something that's, you know, in today's world, that's natural and that's normal. And when everybody else is out of the house, it's hard to stay cooped up. You know, you people can't imagine a world where there's no Erev on Shabbos.
I can.
And my wife didn't have to imagine it, you know. She lived it. But in this generation today, nobody's going to move into a neighborhood where there's no Erev. Like, you know, they're moving out. What?
Things about it.
What's
I lived
that?
11 years with our neighbor.
Okay.
It's wonderful in a certain way.
Well, okay, but you know, when everybody's home and there's the, especially if you have little ones one after another, yeah, it ain't so simple.
That's what I did.
It's not so simple. So I'm just saying, so, you know, we have to balance things. But we should realize that the primary responsibility, you know, is to our children.
We're also not supposed to say no to them, right? We're supposed to be giving them the things that their classmates have and like...
So that's another, that's a very difficult thing. Their classmates, these classmates, stark sein with all the things that they have.
23 boys, the whole class is giving everyone, so... Am I supposed to say, like, no, this is
so
not...
So first of all, let's talk about that for a minute. It's a very important...
We're not giving everyone.
What?
I said, we're not giving everyone. No, our kids are in the same class. Don't worry, you're good.
Okay. So wait a second. First of all, everyone is a very vague word.
Yes.
Everybody has it.
How do you
and it turns out like that there's a class of 25, and there's seven kids that have it, or 10 kids that have it. Everybody has, so you have to be careful about that. But on the other hand, we have to be careful of the fact that if everybody has it, that there could be a very, very deep-rooted resentment or sense of neglect or sense of misfortune. You know, we don't want our children to think. I know somebody, one of my grandchildren called me. And I was very upset. She called up and she says, "We're very poor," and therefore, she had an agenda. She wanted money for something or other. And I said, "You know, money, I'll be happy to send you, but you're not very poor." That's a terrible, terrible thing. One of my proudest moments as a parent was when I was revisiting Los Angeles. We were visiting there. And we were having Lava Malka. I was telling stories of how we survived in Los Angeles. Hope someday we're going to have a book about that. But anyway, I remember overhearing my daughter, whose house I was in, somebody was asking her, "How did you feel growing up like that?" And she said, "I knew we didn't have a lot of money, but I never felt I was lacking anything." And that's a very important juggling act. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how we did it. I don't know what I did. I don't remember. But I was so thrilled to hear that that's the way she felt. And that's very important. If they feel deprived, it's no good. Especially if we have a unique lifestyle and they associate deprivation with that lifestyle, then they're going not to want to enter into that lifestyle. So we have to be careful. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky... I heard once from an uncle of his that when he was in the Koilo in Slabotka, he was so poor that he had one shirt. And Friday afternoon, his wife used to wash the shirt. He had to sit there until she dried quickly. I don't know how she did that. And then he put that same shirt on for Shabbos. That's the way he lived. But when the kids would want something, he would never say, "We don't have money." He would always say, "Nah, it's a narishkeit. What do you need it for? This, talk them out of it." You know, and he's a very smart man. I'm sure he knew how to do that. But he didn't want them to have that feeling that we don't have money. Because if they feel we don't have money, I'm not interested in being like that. That's where, by the way, the desire of our kids to become very rich comes from, "Oh no, I'm not going to live like my parents. Oh no, I'm going to go. My parents didn't have a penny to, you know." And we don't want to create that environment. So the same thing, you know, when there are certain things that we do have to get them. We don't want them to be deprived, even if we have money. But we don't want it to be overindulged. But when everybody has something, we either have to go along with it or find an exciting substitute, which maybe is more to our liking in terms of the type of thing that it is, which will sort of make everyone else jealous of them because I got this, even though what they really wanted the other thing, which everybody had, I got something. So we have to, you know, I don't want certain technology of this. I get something else that's exciting. It's a balancing act because we don't want our children to feel deprived. We don't want our children to feel resentment. We don't want our children to feel they're the only ones, nebuch, that don't have it. On the other hand, there are certain things that we really don't want them to have. And also, there's something else. We have to talk to kids. I have to explain things to them. Anytime we don't explain something, we lose out a lot. you know, we seem just mean and cruel and arbitrary and foolish and irrational and you know, we talk, have a conversation. Now, even I find, even if kids don't know what you're talking about, little kids, oh, but you explained it. Oh, first, an explanation. You felt you had to give me an explanation. Wow, that also makes me feel good about myself. I have no clue what in the world you're talking about. It doesn't matter, but you gave me an explanation, so maybe I'll get older, I'll understand it. I think that balance is very, very important. Yes?
I guess on that note, not about money, but about, like, watching.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do if a kid says everybody else watches?
I don't know, we live in terrible times. The things that everybody else are really watching are really devastating. So, you know, we have a right to have standards. We have a right to teach our kids, even at a very young age, that there are certain things we don't do. Again, as I said before, everybody else doesn't do it. You know, everybody to them is a word that includes three people or more is everybody. You know, that's the rule. So, you know, and you have to explain to them why this is unhealthy, why this is not proper. But all of these explanations only really work when there's a substitute. And that's the trick. You have to find a sub. We have to find things that are more exciting. You talk about watching. We have a whole video series. I'm not sure which ones are appropriate for your kids. But, you know, this Divine Fingerprint series. I'm not doing that. There's tons of stuff out there that's kids, you know, that... And things that could be exciting, and sometimes you have to incentivize. I mean, this is something I think I should also mention. I believe very strongly, bribery is not against the law between a parent and a child. You know, should be against the law between a child and a parent, but between a parent and a child, it's not against the law. We call it incentivizing.
That's a nice word.
What?
It's a nicer word.
It's a nicer word. No, but I'd like to call it what it is because we should know what we're doing. What?
I'm not sure I agree with bribery.
Okay. All right. But yeah. So these incentives, we have to be forthcoming with incentives. And when they get incentives, and especially, have to be creative, have to be exciting, have to be, you know, substituting is hard. But it can be done. And I don't know too much about what's going on in the world, but even in technology, I imagine there are things that everybody has this, but nobody has that. You know what this is? I could have really impressed you and put this out here and get exactly the same results. Or I could have held it here and you wouldn't know. So, look, I got something nobody has. Nobody even knows what this is. My little black box, you think it belongs to the pilot or something. You know, it's a recorder. And it records, and it's quality recording and everything. So you find something that's a little bit off the beaten path, which I really don't know how to use it yet. In fact, I can't even see. It's so small. I can't even see the button to turn it on, so I'm working on that. To figure that out. I don't want to put on my reading glasses just to get it to turn on the recorder.
Grandson.
What?
The grandson.
Yeah, no, I know where, I just can't see it. I think this is where I have to feel it. Anyway, but so you have to come up with creative things that, but you know, with all that we love and with all that we respect and with all that we have relationships and we also have responsibility as a parent. And that sometimes has to be explained, especially to an older kid. A younger kid may not know what responsibility means. But all the guests have said, listen, I have a responsibility as a parent. I have to make sure that you're safe, to make sure that you're, you know, but we have to sort of put our money where our mouth is. We have to be willing to invest in alternatives to, not to, that they shouldn't feel angry, deprived, nebuch. No, we don't want that. Yes?
I have two boys, like close in age. There's a lot of jealousy, like the younger one. Like anything you give to the older one, like automatically it's like against him, and there's like a lot of anger with, you know, jealousy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is there any way to, like,
well, you know, we know, we learn in the Parshas and Chumash that jealousy is a serious issue. And even though Yaakov Avinu gave a ksunas pasim to Yosef, I don't know all the cheshbonis, but it did cause, you know, a lot of trouble. So we do have to be careful about jealousy. You know, try not to favor. Eventually, children have to learn. I guess it's harder when they're close in age, that we have different expectations for different age levels, and there are different types of. For example, the one that's older, you're going to buy tefillin first. You're not going to get tefillin for the other one, or at least not going to let them walk around wearing them or playing with them. You know, like it's a, so they have to understand that this, and you will get these things when you're that age. So I guess it's a little bit of placating and giving them something, and a little bit of through that teaching them that, you know, when you will be there, you'll get the same thing. But age and maturity and whatever other words you have there make a difference. I think the fact that you're going to get it, you have something now, it's not quite what you wanted, but you're going to get there, but then you got to remember to get them there. You know, if you're, by the time they get there, you don't get them, then it's a problem. Yes?
Hi. How do you find the balance between, like, being an active part of your children's lives, but also, like, not being too overwhelming and, like, overbearing? Keeping in mind also that, like, different kids need different things.
Wow. That's an important question. I wish I knew the answer. That's definitely an important question. I said it in passing, but I think it's really significant. Part of respect is giving space. We have to give space. Space means that we have to pick and choose the areas that we're zoning in on, you know, zooming in on, and the areas that we're just going to look the other way. And that would give us a balance. For example, one of the things when I say, I don't know if it fits in your homes, but one of the things I think about respecting space is a room. If a child has a room, they have to give them a little bit of leeway how they keep their room. Now, you know, if you're going to have mice and rats and cockroaches running around the room, then you have to do something about it. That's true. But if it's just a little messy, or just they forget to put things, or the drawers are wide open, as long as they're not fire hazards all over the floor, and then, you know, so that's respect. And it's also not getting too involved. You have to be very careful to respect their privacy. You know, searching through our child's possessions is a terrible invasion of privacy. Now, sometimes you have to do it. You got to be smart. First of all, put on gloves and take the, in case they take forensics, you know. But make sure everything's exactly the way it was in the same mess that it was before, which is hard to do. But seriously, we just have to strike a balance. I think the balance is if they don't want to talk about something, don't press them. Try not to force people into things. Suggest and then, you know, back off. I'm here for you. If you don't want to discuss it now, if you don't want to do this now, and, you know, have to be careful also in that area too with religious pressure. You know, that's sometimes very overbearing. Religious pressure is the worst pressure in the world, by the way. You know, very simple. You know, you get a job. So it's pressure, responsibility. You've got to get up in the morning, you've got to go, you've got to do that. But the worst case scenario is you get fired. You find another job. If you don't succeed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where are you going? You know, I hope your children are not going to go anyplace else after that. To the mosque, to the church, no place to go. So it's a lot of pressure. So therefore, we also have to give them, you know, space. Shlema HaMelech says, Seif Dovra HaKol Nishma Selekim Yiro. So Rashi says, what's Selekim Yiro? Mashatuchal HaSei V'Lipchol HaShemayim. You do the best you can, but your heart has to be looking heavenward to try to do better each time. I think that's some, you know, you're not too invasive in their lives. You give them guidance, but, you know, you do the best you can. Don't have to micromanage their lives if it's possible. Giving them choices is also a very good thing because that makes them feel good about themselves. And, you know, for example, you must wear this dress or pants or shirt or whatever it is today. That's too much. You want, if you have to, besides that, can't choose, lay out two or three possibilities. Let them choose. It does wonders for their ego. They feel so good about themselves because they made a choice. So you have to look for things like that to give them space. Then those things that are really critical, where you really have to be involved, you'll be more welcome to be involved.